Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, April 9th, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, home networks, part of our April home cleanup month on Geek Speak. We'll be talking about wiring, cabling, and of course, all the settings and equipment you need to know about making your home network safe and secure. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then click on Send a Message. I'll be giving out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com, and Miles Elam, programmer and student of American literature. Miles and John, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Before we start our discussion about home networks, let's cover a bit of geek news. Miles, we'll start with you.
Well, passive email monitoring has led to the world's first arrest due to email. The NSA was monitoring some communications going on between a Pakistani individual and a person in Britain.
And who's the NSA again?
The National Security Agency.
Administration, I think?
Agency, I think it is, actually.
So a federal unit.
In any case, they monitor
no
email?
Such agency, yeah. So the idea behind it was saying that foreign traffic that comes to the U.S. is subject to U.S. laws, and the NSA has a perfect right to monitor all Internet traffic. This comes from a former technical advisor to the U.S. Federal Communications Commission.
All right. So, what was the what flagged them? Do you know much about the email itself, the body?
Don't know exactly, but it the person, a 24-year-old software developer named Mohammed Momin Khawaja, has been charged with facilitating a terrorist act and being part of a terrorist group.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, it's just an arrest; it's not a prosecution. Thank you very much, Miles, for that. John,
I've got a first ever, that I know of, OS X Trojan Horse Alert.
So a virus for Macintosh OS X.
Right. It's called MP3 Concept, also called MP3 Virus Gen, virus.gen. However, us geeks are a little suspicious of this one, since I've checked the three major virus vendors that I always check, Sophos, Symantec, and McAfee. None of them have anything about it. It's only coming from this one company.
Which sells virus protection
software. Theoretically, it exploits a weakness where it's encapsulated in the ID3 tag of an MP3 file.
The virus itself is in there.
Uh-huh. Right. So what they're saying is if you download something with a .mp3 extension that's infected with this virus and then run it,
And then make sure that the machine has executable rights set on that file.
And then try to
run it as an application.
That's the part that's hard. So what I've been trying to research is, can a file set itself to executable? Can it be made to?
It can
if it's already set to executable. So
right. Well, a file can be set to executable. Miles and I assume that theoretically a bad email client could look at the MIME type that's sent with that file attachment and define it by that MIME type as an executable file.
And then set the bit?
No, that would do it. The operating system would set it up as an executable file. But I don't think that's going to happen on Mail, which is Macintosh OS X's email client. Very good client, actually. But what was really telling for me about this is after reading about it yesterday, I went up to the site of the company that provides a patch or a fix for this, a problem, and made a note of it. And the banner, the advertising banner on the top of their page talked about this in their advertising banner.
Right.
And to me, that's a marketing ploy. So Yes, it is possible. As we've always known, it's possible to have a virus on a Macintosh OS X machine, and you should have a virus protection software installed. And I still would claim that this wasn't one.
I concur.
Cool. Yeah, if anybody has any information to the contrary, please email us, let us know. But for right now, it doesn't look like this is an issue.
But but this is a perfect opportunity if you're not running a virus protection software on your Macintosh to get one, buy it, and install it. And there might be a free version. If someone doesn't know that, of course, you can email the Geeks by going to geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and then click on Send a Message. Miles, next story.
Similar security story. There's another Windows vulnerability. This one's in
another one?
Yeah, this one's in the help system. Anytime a program has Windows Help. The issue behind this, it's a cross-scripting, cross-site scripting issue. It mostly has to do with an Internet Explorer bug. And the fact
don't
that,
they always?
And the fact that the Windows Help system uses the Internet Explorer engine as its rendering widget.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have is the help system hasn't been put under the same stringent standards as the browser has, even though the browser has had its issues. But the browser in and of itself isn't vulnerable. It's going through the help system that a virus could get a foothold, as it were.
Now, my understanding is if you pass the right parameter through a not an HTTP command through a web browser, but a help file command, which I can't recall what it is, you can launch help from Internet files. So from a website, you could launch the help application. So there is a vulnerability from the Internet side.
That is true, yeah.
But in any case, all right, thanks. Is there a patch for it?
To my knowledge, there is no patch yet available.
All right, so watch out. If you're going to be clicking on, if you're using Windows and you're going to be clicking on help files, not help HTML documents, basically hover over the link on the website, and if it says .html at the very end, you're probably okay. John, one more story, and we're going to go into our subject at hand.
This isn't so much a news item as it is something personal that happened to me this week that's rather relevant. I got an email to a dear eBay user during a regular update and verification of the accounts. We couldn't verify your account information. I'm always getting stuff from eBay because I do an eBay business. So when I get something from eBay that sounds like, oh, your account information may have a problem, I always go check it out because I do my business through eBay. Therefore, it's really important to me.
Sure.
So I went and checked it out. It brought up an eBay page asking me to log in. So I logged in. And then it started asking me for all these really personal information. Credit card numbers, all my eBay account numbers and passwords, my PayPal passwords, all the kind of stuff that an ID thief would need. So I did a little bit of research into it. And thanks to Miles, who sent a little tutorial out to the geeks on how to read an email header.
Which Miles promises to put on our website pretty soon.
Which he's busy working on the tool,
sure,
so that he can post it. I was able to find out this actually came from .ro, which I believe is Romania. And then if you look up at where it takes you, you can tell it's a bogus site. It's not secure.
Okay.
Anyway.
Did you actually log in with your eBay account information?
I did. And then I immediately went and changed my eBay password and my PayPal password just because I'm paranoid. So it really struck me as this was so good looking and looked so legitimate that I went up and logged in without even thinking.
You a professional, well, maybe you don't get paid, but almost professional geek.
I used to do network.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so you're a professional geek.
Yeah.
You got suckered into one of a scam on internet scam.
Right.
I'm proud of you, John.
I just want to say...
It's happened to me, too.
No, I mean, I didn't go and fill out all
right,
the information.
Okay. You gave me your password, so it was for a
right.
second there. Okay.
Right, for a second there, it had me fooled because I was rushed.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really look at the URL, which was... It had eBay in the title, but it was after... There's usually www.whatever.com/something. eBay would have to be in that first, before the first slash.
Right.
It was after the first slash.
And there's some tricks to do for Internet Explorer where it could actually be ebay.com/, and then later on there's something else that fools the browser into going to a different domain. But the other thing that was of note is that it wasn't a secure website.
Right.
Even though it could have been a secure, they could have gotten a certificate for a secure website.
If they had just asked me a few questions like you need to put your eBay password in and you need to put your PayPal password in, I may have actually glossed over and done it.
No site should ever ask for both those information at the
right.
same time.
But since they asked for a ton of information like driver's license, credit card info, all that, I knew it was bogus. So anyway, the reason I bring this up is I want people to be aware that there are scams out there that look very real. If you ever get anything asking you to input credit card information or passwords, other than, you're going to a site to purchase something. But if it's ever asking you for information that feels personal, social security number, anything like that, be suspicious, email them or contact that company and say...
The real company, right?
Yeah, and say, I got this letter, I got this email, what's going on?
Right.
Always be suspicious about things like that, because there are people out there who will try to steal your identity.
Right. And thank you. And just think about this as well. Email from address means nothing. So you can totally make a fictitious email. It's just like someone calling your phone and saying, "Hi, I'm from your bank and I need your information." You'd never do that over the phone, so don't do that through.
Right. It was from an email address, update@ebay.com.
Seems pretty valid.
Yeah.
All right. From Strata Systems, we have founder Yorgos and network admin Joel Schaefer. And from the wiring side of the network, we have Adam Baker from We've Got It Wired. We're talking about home network security, setup, needs, requirements, and all that in the second half of the show in about 15 minutes. You're welcome to call in. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Yorgos, Joel, and Adam, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Good morning.
So let's, real quick, we'll start with We've Got It Wired. Adam, that's your company. What do you do? What do you focus on?
I'm a telecommunications contractor, and I've chosen to focus primarily on the physical layer, the cabling aspect of things, how to get the signal from point A to point B.
So that means that you're going to people's homes, drilling holes in walls, going to businesses, drilling holes in walls, installing jacks, running cable all over the place.
That's exactly right.
So and you're really friendly with spiders.
That's true. Yes. Have to have a good relationship with spiders.
I'm assuming you're crawling a lot under houses and kind of dirty job, or is...
My focus is actually primarily in the commercial sector, so not a great deal of climbing under houses, but
right.
It does happen.
Climbing into crawl spaces and attics going above.
Indeed, that's true. Yeah. Ceiling tiles. We're very familiar with ceiling tiles.
Now, when I was speaking with you last night, you'd mentioned that I asked if you were doing any wireless installations, and you don't do any wireless because you do cable networking.
That's true, yes.
So what do you feel about the wireless currently?
Well, niggling at the back of my mind, of course, I think of it as a threat, but if I look at the current status of things and comparing at least the broadband, if not the security of copper in comparison to wireless, there's really no comparison. And copper continuously remains several leaps ahead of wireless infrastructure.
Right now, the copper that you're laying, what speeds can it handle?
You know, in Cat 6, I believe you can get gigabit under, you know, optimal conditions.
At certain lengths.
Exactly.
Now, one thing that struck me a while ago, we got a call in from a company. I always think about this. A company that was putting in, fabrication company that did metal fabrication. And they had a whole floor, and they had some CNC machines on the floor. And they needed, of course, to run network stuff to that so they could drop through the network, they could drop CNC files to run this machine. And the codes of that environment say that you have to have everything in a metal conduit. And he was reading up on Cat 5 laying, and you can't do it in a metal conduit. So can you talk a little bit about why you shouldn't run net or respond to that?
I have to be honest with any... I'm ignorant to the fact that you cannot run Cat 5 in
or,
metal
quote,
conduit.
Should not.
Yeah.
Okay,
in fact,
so
we
do it
all the time.
Oh, you do?
Oh, absolutely.
And the networks you layer work fine?
Absolutely. Never had an issue one.
No.
And in fact, if it's relevant, I'm not certain, but they do make shielded Cat 5 with a metallic insulator.
Right. So. Okay. And do you run... What about like outdoor use? Do you ever do that kind of outdoor stuff?
Absolutely. It's primarily the same... cable, and there's additions which make it impervious to the elements.
So come
there's
some
a UV coating, and often if you choose, you can get what's called flooded cable, and it's got a waterproof goo in it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Really messy to work
it
with,
is,
right?
Exactly.
Now, do you do optical?
Yes, we do.
Fiber optic. And when you're dealing with fiber optic, are there any precautions you have to do that are a little different than dealing with copper?
Precautions in as far as safety and installation?
Yeah.
There are a few. The size of the fiber optic and the fact that, well, I think it's now a plastic, well, let's call it a conductor, as opposed
light
to...
Light conductor.
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to what used to be closer to actually glass. In the small fragments, if you should get one in your eye, could cause a real problem. So generally, you want to be very careful about your environment. And
slow
make sure
and steady.
Exactly.
Breathe kind of thing.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when you run fiber, do you know the speeds for fiber?
It starts to become, and again, I'm open to my ignorance on the subject, but I'm not aware of it surpassing gigabit itself.
But it does have a distance.
From Yorgos,
yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I think 2.5 miles is some of the distance that you can get.
So basically, Adam, We've got it wired. Does that kind of hardware installation of the business? And you could do homes if business slows down enough. I mean, you might do a home.
Oh, absolutely. Business,
especially
yeah,
if one of your
clients
that contract you
indeed
out do that. Yeah. But you don't normally deal with the company individually. You normally have someone like Strata Systems come in, hire you out to do a job. Is that
it varies.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the reasons why I've chosen primarily what they call the physical layer, is that I can have a relationship with people like Yorgos and not be competitive. So they know when I come into an environment that I'm not going to be approaching their clientele for the aspects of networking that they're going to be providing.
Right. So you're very much like a contracting plumber or a sheetrock person, kind of that kind of realm where you come
identical
in and do the job. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's good to know. So are you doing a lot of business in Santa Cruz? Do you do a lot of like new buildings, old buildings? What kind of?
All of the above.
All right.
In Santa Cruz, out of down to Big Sur, up north to, say, Sacramento and beyond.
All right. So now we're going to step over to Strata Systems, but Adam, at any point you want to join the conversation, answer questions. And, of course, when people do call in, you can start emailing us now to get in the queue. You can just go to the geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and click on Send a Message. Any questions about networking, we'll be able to handle anything. So just go ahead and give us a ring or a phone number. We will be taking your calls in about 10 minutes. The phone number is 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Yorgos, you're the founder of Strata Systems. Strata Systems focuses on what?
Actually, I opened the business in 1987.
Wow, so it's changed.
A lot. On those days, we had to fuss around with DOS and interrupts and cards and different nightmares.
So it's become easier from the perspective of installing stuff on the machine?
Yes, big change.
Well, I mean, for example, what machines that ship now, it's hard to get one that doesn't have a network jack already in there and working.
It's built in the motherboard, so
right.
It's a lot easier to deal, especially with a new operating system, Windows XP.
Right.
It's pretty easy to find hardware and drivers and eliminates all the nightmares we had 15, 18 years ago.
Right.
Now it's different problems, of course.
Of course. Joel Schaefer is also with you, a network administrator that works at Strata Systems. Joel, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you, Lyle.
Now, you seem a little quiet. Let's see.
Scoot up a little.
Scoot up a little bit and bump your mic up. That sounds good. Joel, what do you do at Strata Systems?
One of Yorgos is trained network technicians, so I do a lot of field work on the home networking side. Two types of projects there. It's either maintenance or it's install.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point. Let's talk a little bit about what your business. You support businesses, but you also support individuals, home users.
Yeah, small businesses and home users. And
are you the kind of company that, like, I have a network problem at home and I can call you up and say I need somebody because I have no network access and I can't figure it out?
Yeah, basically we do everything. We even build our own systems. That's what I used to do a lot in the past 10 years, and then all the big manufacturers came along.
Gateway,
Dell,
Dell
and yeah, stuff. So my focus right now is on labor and take care of people with all the problems they have with networks.
Are you a complete support house? Like if I called up and said, my hard drive failed, I don't know how to install a new hard drive. You do that kind of thing?
Yeah, we do from A to Z everything.
Okay, cool.
Data recovery and, teach you how to deal with your computer problems and
right. Let's talk about teaching. What kind of support do you do for educating people, rather than just coming to the home and kind of showing people what you're doing as you're doing it? Do you have any classes or anything?
We're gonna start next couple of weeks a small class. We're gonna handle like 6 people at a time, trying to educate them.
Okay.
On office products and security and.
So you offer some of that. And yes, People can learn more about that, I'm assuming, by
www.stratasystems.com. Yes.
All right. I want to now get into the discussion about a user. Well, first off, what percentage would you say of people that you service at home or small, probably at home, have a dial-up connection, an individual phone dial-up connection at 56K or something?
Yeah, it's pretty small.
Pretty small. So most people that you're dealing with are already past that stage and have DSL or cable.
Yes, because now the prices on DSL, they're pretty reasonable.
Yeah,
So most of the people, they prefer to go with DSL.
I'm almost insulted at this point if people don't have DSL that can get it, because I can't get it. And John here,
most of the people, they have
really
dial-ups when they're far away.
Right, yeah, right. Because you can get, right now, you can get DSL for about $30 a month, and that comes with your ISP, and that's pretty
right.
reasonable price for an extremely high-speed connection.
It is.
Okay, so let's say we've got some, I know that we have people that are listening right now, and you might be one of those out there, that has a dial-up connection but is interested in getting DSL and just feels like it's kind of a technical hurdle that they have to get through. Let's talk a little bit about what you have to do when you want to get DSL, and specifically on the network side. So you call up some company that offers it, pretty much any ISP, probably the one you already have offers DSL, and you ask them to get the package. And they're going to ask you a few things, but one thing they're going to ask you is what operating system you're running. Now, is that really important at this point for DSL, which if it's Macintosh or Windows or Linux operating system?
I wouldn't say it's that important for DSL.
Okay,
good. It's important for the vendor of DSL if they can support, connectivity to it.
Right.
Depends on how you want to connect. We recommend putting in a router and adding a layer of...
Okay, so that's what I asked. When you buy DSL from some ISP, they're going to say, yes, you need this router, the modem. Right. You're going to need the modem, and that's pretty much all you're going to need, and you have to buy that to get DSL, and that's the case. And I don't know of any. I'm sure there are DSL modems that are internal, but most all DSL modems are these out boxes that connect to your computer via Ethernet, and a phone line plugs into it.
Right.
And it's normally, about the size of a phone, without any kind of buttons or anything on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they cost, how much do they cost?
Usually they're included with the price
startup
of
fees.
Commit to
right.
a year. If you buy it through a retail channel, it's around $100.
Right. So
when you get the modem, does it usually come with a router built in?
Depends on the vendor.
That's the next part.
In some cases it can. Yeah.
So how do you know if it's got a router in there? And first off, what's a router?
A router converts network addresses and routes them. Basically, it keeps a list of addresses.
A traffic
table. Yeah, exactly. And knows which interfaces to send traffic through.
Okay.
In the case of a home network, you've basically got a internal address and an external address. Your external one being the public one on the internet, which is assigned to the DSL modem. If you are connecting via DSL, there is also cable.
Cable
modem options.
This gets so complicated so quickly. But
right.
let's start out there. If there's a cable modem or a DSL modem, they in general function the same way.
Mm-hmm.
There is on one side of them there is an internet public address. And on the other side is your computer or your router.
Right.
And a router offers kind of a separation from that internet, a little bit of a protection. And that's, I'm assuming, why you recommend a router in that mix.
Yeah, exactly. Without the router, your public address is basically your computer's address, and
right.
your computer's sitting out there on the internet.
Wait, so you're talking about a network address translation here?
Yes, on the router, yeah.
I was curious. In this area, I'm like one of the only geeks that actually has DSL.
Rub it in.
Ours, yeah. ours hasn't been a NAT. I actually haven't come across a NAT in any of the ones that I've gotten from a vendor. I've always had to get the home DSL gateway kit.
You're talking about a router now?
Yeah.
Or
something that'll provide network translation.
Yeah, I guess the equipment I get from the ISP.
Yeah, the equipment you get from the ISP is typically not a router. It's a DSL modem,
okay.
And that does not provide network address translation. That's why we would recommend a router.
And for the geeks out there, is it normally PPP? Is that what they're doing normally?
PPPoE,
typically.
Basically, you have to ask. When you call the ISP, you need to ask them if they're going to provide you with a router and firewall or not. That's the safest thing to do.
And if they say no, we just offer a modem, then what do you do now?
Then you come to us.
Wow, spoken like a businessman. Surprise.
You can find those routers everywhere.
Okay.
Actually.
And it's basically they're called home DSL / cable routers.
Exactly.
And the general concept is they've got one WAN, wide area network, which would be the internet port on them. And it looks like a thick... The Ethernet jacks look like, and what Adam does all the time, looks like a thick phone jack. It's wider. And it's called
RJ45.
Why 45?
Haven't a clue.
That's the code.
Yeah,
okay,
you geeks make up all this stuff. We're not responsible.
It's because it's not an RJ11.
Exactly. Right. Good, good.
Wait, RG11, isn't it?
No, it's
RG11.
RG11 is a 6 position, and RJ45 is an 8 position.
And people
otherwise known as a phone jack and an Ethernet jack.
Mm-hmm. So RJ11 is a phone.
That is true.
Okay, so... And actually, you can physically plug a phone RJ11 into an RJ45, but you really shouldn't do that. An expert can do that, but don't do that yourself.
It turns out you can also fit a USB cable
You have kids, don't you?
thank you, Megan, for that.
Right. You're 3-year-old. All right. So back to what you need to get. You need to get this router to make yourself a little more protected. But the other thing that's great about a router is that you can connect more than one machine in your home or your small business to your DSL line.
Yeah.
And that's a big selling feature if you've got more than one machine. It's almost
another
necessary.
Another advantage is the router establishes the connection to the DSL, so you don't have to have your computer on to have your DSL connection live.
Now, why would you need your DSL connection on without your computer on?
Well, like you were saying, if you're sharing more than one computer.
Right, okay. So, in general, you get this box that's called a cable DSL router, and they're cost about $60, something like that.
Yeah, in the retail channel, yeah.
And then another one you can get if you have a laptop is routers that also have wireless built into them. So you've got like a 4-port, and we'll talk about ports in just a second, router, and you can also get antennas on it that will supply your laptops. Okay, so in just a moment, we're going to jump into what you need to do on setting up your router if you're not calling Strata Systems. And having them do it for you, how you need to do that. But right now, we're going to talk a little bit about what we're going to get into. First off, you're welcome to call us up and ask questions or comments. 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. And you can get into our email inboxes by going to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then click on Send a Message. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. If you have questions or comments, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Our guests are Yorgos and Joel from Strata Systems, and Adam Baker from We've Got It Wired. We can handle any network questions, problems, concerns. Our geeks are Miles Elam and John Tracy. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. You are listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. Joel,
yes.
Adam, Yorgos, thanks for being here today on GeekSpeak and taking people's calls that will be coming in any moment.
Great pleasure.
Thank you.
While we're waiting, let's talk a little bit about, you got mail. Okay, well, we do have mail, but hang on just a second, John. I love that, just a big note, mail. Let's talk a little bit about when you get that router, because you decided, yes, I need to do it, and you go down to a place like Santa Cruz Electronics or Fry's or a multitude of places you can buy these routers. You pick it up, and you already had DSL working because the DSL person came into your home and, like, set you up, and it cost you a lot of money. And now you want to add a router. So you come into your home, and you unplug the cable that's going to your computer, that from the DSL modem to the computer, and you plug it into your router WAN, the WAN port, which is a little plug, and then you have to get a cable to connect the rest of the port to your computer, and then everything works great?
Hopefully.
if
the install program works, sure.
So what's the install program that needs to happen?
Each router is a little different. So some routers come with a CD that you pop in. You know, it says on the box, router installs in 3 minutes, and then 3 hours later, call Stratos to find out why.
Pull all your hair out.
That's right. So, yeah, each vendor router is a little bit different in how it's installed, but the concepts are pretty much the same.
And it's not that scary when it really comes down to it.
Yeah.
Most of them now you configure them through a web page.
Correct.
And how do you access that normally?
They typically
especially
come with a default.
DSL.
What's that?
How do you access the web page without your DSL?
That's a good point.
Well, actually, you're accessing a web page on the router itself. The router acts as a web server and has its configuration, you know, exposed through web pages. They come with a default, you know, address that you try and point your browser to.
They also come with a default password.
Yes.
Got to know what that is.
It's good to keep that password, right?
No. First thing you want to do.
You need to change the password because everybody knows it.
Yorgos, when you first started installing, when Strata Systems first started installing routers and such for companies, was it always a website URL that you just had that point to, or how did you normally configure a router?
Yes. You put an address.
Well, how do you do it when you first started out? How was it that you configured routers when you first started in the biz?
You open your Explorer, and then you put the address.
That was how first, it wasn't serial ports and telnets?
Not really for home users.
Not for home users. Oh, okay.
Routers used to be these giant things with a couple of fans in the back that would sit in the network closet and soak up a lot of energy.
Oh, yeah.
And those you had to take your laptop. God, we had these giant laptops with the plasma screens, and we'd hook up a serial cable to them, and you talk to them that way directly. And then you'd have to set up their IP address before you could talk to them any other way.
And you had to telnet into them.
Exactly. Yeah, you did have to telnet into. Or some of them...
Telnet or async.
Yeah, async. That was the other thing.
You're familiar with ancient technologies, John, because you used to work for the school system.
Thank you, yes.
Where they're still working.
Yes, thank you.
Or pseudo-working. Well, we do have phone calls, so we'll just jump right into them, I think. Eric from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak. Oh, you know what? Let me actually connect you. Hi, Eric. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, well, it's a little off topic, but it's kind of about networking. A while ago, I heard on your show about Wi-Fi in the San Lorenzo Valley. Is that true, or am I just making that up?
Yeah, actually, there is a company, and the company is... Can you turn your radio down, if possible?
Sorry.
The company is called Internet Highway. It's an ISP in Boulder Creek, actually, and I believe they have a Wi-Fi hookup downtown. Are you running a Windows machine?
Yes, I believe so. It's for my coworker, and I told him I had heard about it on your radio show a while ago, I thought. And
yeah, Wi-Fi normally has pretty short range, so we're talking about... at the most, a kind of a block, about that range. The Wi-Fi we're talking about is 802.11b or g, or the derivatives a and a whole bunch of other letters that aren't as common.
I thought g was supposed to go up to 50-mile radius.
50-mile radius, if you have a directional antenna kind of line of sight and you're really working it, yes. Oh. But that really comes down to the antenna. Like, for example, let's say some shop in Boulder Creek offers wireless, and then and they've got an antenna on their roof. If they've got a really big, you know, a special antenna, they're going to have it on their roof, and it's going to cost them a few hundred dollars, and that's going to, you know, triple their range. So now you're talking three blocks, and then you get up at let's say Crest Ranch. You go up to that lookout view at Crest Ranch where you can actually see down to Boulder Creek. So then you set up your laptop and you get this big directional antenna because that's like a mile away, and it basically looks like a big tube, a shotgun mic kind of thing if you're familiar with microphones, and you aim it at it. Yeah, you've got wireless, it will work. But if you get trees in the way, it probably won't. And in general, it wouldn't be the way to get high-speed access to your home. But if you wanted to go downtown to a shop there that had something, and you sat there and ate bagels and worked on the Internet, then you basically are emulating what John is doing in Felton, because John lives in Scienti. And
that wouldn't work too well. My coworker wanted to have it at his home.
Where does he live?
On Teal Lane, which is halfway between Boulder Creek and the school, I believe.
Right. Well, I think that DSL would get that far. I think that when the school was put in, of course, Redwood Elementary, which is closing now, when it was put in, I think they got their... Well, in general, you want to call it... Which ISP is he using, do you know?
Cruise.io dial-up.
Okay, Cruise.io is going to know if they can support DSL in that area. In fact, if you did a search... Well, I would just call Cruise.io and say, look, can you have DSL? And that's what you'd want to get for the home there in Boulder Creek.
Yeah, he was telling me it wasn't possible. I'll have a look into that.
It is also possible to go ahead and order it and hope that it is possible. Okay. A lot of companies are going to restrict you because they think it's not going to be possible. Therefore, they don't want to take the risk. But if you say, you know, I'll pay for everything, then you're taking the risk, which is going to be, you know, kind of $100 or something like that. It's possible to get DSL. It will probably be slower. But it is a feasible thing to do. One of the geeks did that up on Big Basin Way.
Okay.
Thank you, Eric, for the call.
Thank you.
And the school up there is using a fractional T1 over lease lines.
Okay, so it's all... You know, I wonder if they could open that now the school's not there and just start selling, high-speed access to people up there. That'd be kind of cool.
And then keep the school open.
Yeah, that would be nice to just pay for it that way.
Generate a little
income. Hey. Tom from Salinas, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Oh, hi. I was wondering if you can offer me any directions to go to look for fixing my son's computer. His USB equipment working.
All USB access stopped?
Yes.
Did you add a new peripheral recently?
He did not add a new peripheral.
Okay, well, let's see if the guys from Strata System can suggest an idea on how to get machines USB working again.
Well, actually, he did add a new DVD burner.
Well, it's possible the USB ports, the external USB ports, if they're on the front, got unplugged from the motherboard when he was messing around inside. That's one option. Are the ports for the USB on the front or the back of the machine?
Both.
Okay. Well, are the back ones still working?
No, nothing's working.
Okay. Idea?
The first thing to try is to look uninstall the drivers, the USB drivers, and trying to reinstall them again.
You're on a Windows machine?
Yeah. It's running XP.
Okay.
XP.
So how do they go install uninstall those drivers?
Right-click on my computer, select On the desktop? On the desktop, yeah. The icon for my computer on the desktop. Although in XP, you've got an option of not having it on the desktop. So
it'll be under control panels in the start menu.
Yes. Start menu, control panel.
Double-click on system.
System. You should see a list of devices showing up under the system.
Device manager.
Yeah. Under device manager. And, it, you know, theoretically, the USB ones will have little red, I think, exclamation marks next to them if they're not working correctly. You can actually double-click on that, and then there should be a button that says reinstall driver. You can try that.
Or right-click and delete them first.
You can delete them, restart.
Remove them completely.
And then just restart the machine.
And then restart the machine.
And it should auto-detect them and try and reinstall.
And one recommendation I would have is unplug all USB devices first, restart the machine, plug in one thing that you've had the longest, if you will, and try to reboot the machine and see if that thing works. It could be that one of the peripherals is messing up the serial chain. So there's your options. If you don't see a red exclamation point next to the drive, the USB drivers, basically, in the device manager.
If he uninstalls them and then just restarts the machine, they'll reinstall again. He doesn't need to put a CD in.
No, you don't. Automatically,
it'll find the drivers.
Find the drivers.
Oh, I see.
XP is a plug-and-play operating system, which means it's supposed to detect devices.
Or plug-and-pray sometimes.
That's right.
Tom, good luck.
Thanks a lot.
You betcha. Bye. Yeah, losing USB, especially nowadays where keyboards and mice can be USB, it's difficult.
Oh, yeah.
It's important when you're dealing with USB to understand that it's a chain. So everything that you plug into a single USB port, you know, you have your printer, either this or that, it goes to a hub, and then everything plugged into that hub, it's all got a function. It's all got to be talking properly. If one is misbehaving, it'll take down the whole chain. So it's a good idea to if you can get one device to work, great, then you know the USB port is working. Keep plugging in devices until you get one that doesn't work. That's your bad device.
Cool. Good way to detect it. We did get a call earlier, and it's off-air call. It's basically saying that the same email that John got from, quote, eBay, which was really a hoax, one thing that was kind of a telltale for him is that they didn't have his real name. They only had the...
Dear eBay user.
Yeah. And eBay is going to send messages to your name because they have a whole bunch of stuff already on file. But, of course, the first thing you do when you get an email like that is just go to the URL yourself. Type it in your browser yourself. And then log in and then see what's going on. And they're not. No one's going to send you an email to say, do this kind of stuff.
And if you go up to Safe Harbor on eBay, they actually have a tutorial on how to spot a phony email. It's recommended if you do a business.
All right, so the phone number is to call in, ask network questions, anything you want, 476-2800, or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. The lines are open right now. You can also send us mail, and we're going to get to a mail right now. Go to geekspeak.org. Click on The Geeks, then click on Send a Message. Fill that form out. We'll get in our email inbox like the message that John's about to tell us about.
From Alan in Santa Cruz. He wants to know which is better, Norton or Zone Alarm. Do they conflict with each other? And I assume he's got a home system he's trying to set up a firewall for.
And he probably means Norton Antivirus and Zone Alarm.
Yeah.
Let's guess that way. Because Norton actually has, I think...
Is there a Norton firewall?
I don't know.
I believe they have a product.
Yeah. Okay.
It is.
Okay, well, you don't want to run two of those software firewalls at the same time. That's kind of redundant. But can you go ahead and address Zone Alarm?
Sure. Zone Alarm is just that. It's a firewall. And what a firewall does is it blocks you from fires. Now, it blocks incoming traffic and certain types of outbound traffic as well. And the way Zone Alarm installs is it blocks all traffic. And then when you try to send traffic over what's referred to as a port on TCP/IP packet, it then pops up a little window and says, you know, do you want to allow this type of traffic?
It's classified. And this is the application that's saying it wants to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So Zone Alarm then will keep track of the types of applications that you send traffic over. And
now firewalls, I'm familiar with firewalls being in a router. So what's this software thing you can install? Why would you need that?
If you don't have a router, if your PC is just that, it's directly on the internet, you know, through DSL. So again, you've got a IP address, which is publicly available, you know, on the internet, and that's assigned to your computer. So you've got no device in between your DSL modem and your computer.
Now, do you recommend Zone Alarm for someone like that? Would you think that's
a good
product?
Absolutely. Zone Alarm, yeah, it's a good product.
Okay.
Yeah, is there any problem between Zone Alarm and, say, I'm assuming he's meaning Norton Antivirus here.
Yeah, I think so, too. So
no, Norton Antivirus blocks just that viruses. It doesn't block traffic. Yeah, that's the key distinguisher is, you know, Zone Alarm will look at what kind of traffic is going back and forth. And Norton Antivirus will scan files and look at sort of applications that try to access files on your hard drive. And then, you know, if the behavior from that application is classified as a virus, it'll pop up a little warning screen and say, you know, it's blocked this type of virus.
So I wonder if Zone Alarm will keep the antivirus from auto-updating. You can probably tell it not to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. When auto-updates tries to update, Zone Alarm will pop up a screen that says, this application is trying to access the Internet over this port. Do you want to allow it? And if you block that traffic, then Norton Antivirus updates will not get updated.
Do products like Zone Alarm, do they just shut down all ports? And then as traffic goes in or out, they say, hey, do you want to open this port to allow this traffic?
Yeah, by default, they shut down everything. And then when you try and access it, that's when it asks you, do you want to allow this type of traffic? And you get choices. You know, do you want to allow it just for this one session, or do you always want to have it open?
I just want to make a comment here that sometimes when you have networks, like multiple computers on the peer-to-peer, Zone Alarm creates a lot of problems.
Why is that?
If you don't know what you're doing, because mm-hmm. it blocks all the addresses. So you need to know how to set it up and make it work, because it can cause a lot of nightmares.
You mean like for file sharing?
For file sharing. Even seeing the other computers or seeing the server.
Some examples. So, like, if you had Zone Alarm on all those machines, it'd be blocking all the outside ports, if you will.
Correct.
So then you want to go, well, I want to connect to a machine. You look at your network browse, and no machines are there because of
that
software.
Yeah. It creates a lot of...
You don't like it, basically, in a lot of ways. But it's a great situation when you only have one machine.
Correct.
And you don't have that router. But
Correct.
Once you have that router, it's much better to put that firewall at that router level, I would assume.
Absolutely. I prefer, and I tell customers to use hardware firewall instead of software.
When we're talking about a $60 product, a piece of equipment that can normally do it four port kind of thing,
that's the job better than software.
Plus, it doesn't chew up your processor time and memory,
and it doesn't have conflict with other programs, because a lot of programs they conflict with each other.
Right. And it can't stop. It can't be stopped by the person on the computer. It's just like the firewall is something you don't have to think about once you set it up.
That's
kind of
right.
thing. It's on the router. You can.
Yes.
So yeah, hardware. I recommend hardware too. I think it's a good idea. So Zone Alarm has its purposes, but if you have a choice, go for a router. Virus protection. We're going to be covering next week. We'll talk all about how you make sure you have a virus client that is or a virus protection client that really helps you out. We're talking about the networks today, and you can join the conversation by calling 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can send us email, which we'll respond to even if we don't get to during the show today. The guests are Yogos from Strata Systems, founder, and Joel Schaefer, network administrator from Strata Systems, and Adam Baker from his own company, We've Got It Wired, which does wiring for Greater Santa Cruz County. I'd say Strata Systems, Santa Cruz County?
Yes.
Okay, if someone called you from Monterey, would you go down there?
Depends.
Who's a big enough client?
Exactly.
So not servicing all the Central Coast like KOSP does, but definitely a large percentage. You're welcome to ask questions and comments about the topic, just like Moose from SoCal did. Moose, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yes?
Yes, hi, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, how's it going?
Quite well.
I was wondering, I live up in SoCal, like a mile from SoCal Drive on Main Street, and I'm lucky to get 41,000 bits per whatever, you know?
You try
41,000, I'm jealous.
What?
you connect at 56K and you
44K. I get 44K sometimes and 40 most of the time. And is there any way to get that better, get that higher? Or
You're actually hitting kind of the top end of the 56K. 56K is kind of an optimum.
Oh, really?
I live up in the mountains, up in Zionte, and I routinely get 18.
Oh, my God.
On a good day, I get 28. Once I got, what was it? Once I got like 30 something, I was jazzed. So
you take a while.
Yes.
Yeah, but he lives a little farther than from his town, and if you live only a mile, you might actually be able to get DSL. Have you looked into it?
They say no, because it's all the way down in Capitola there on Capitola Road, right by the mall.
Yeah, basically there's what are they called? What are those stations called?
Central offices.
Yeah. Switch boxes, central, yeah. And there's basically the wire distance from that to your home needs to be a certain length. It's possible to go further than what they're going to want to sell you right away, but you're taking a risk doing it. What you want to do is ask around with your neighbors. If you find someone down your street closer by four blocks and they have it, then you'll be able to get it. So
okay.
There's kind of a kind of a praying thing you can do. Also, I hear that the cable company that supports Santa Cruz County is coming out with internet cable or bandwidth.
Yeah, I heard there. I saw them. They had like 4 or 5 trucks out over in like Live Oak area, and they've been inching around through there. And that's good. You know, it'll be in a little. You know, in the next this quarter, they said.
That's what they said. First quarter 2000. But you know, who knows?
Yeah. That's like.
The other thing you can do is there. In 2 weeks, we're going to have a guy that can service people via high-range wireless, and it's kind of a line-of-sight thing to, I think, Mount Toro, but somewhere else. KOSP is transmitting from Mount Toro, and so if someone put up a wireless connection there and you can get KOSP very well, it's possible you could get high-speed internet access, but it's going to be costly. It's going to be more than $100 a month.
I'm on the hill, so I doubt I'd be able to get that.
Most people are. The real world has trees, you know. Is your name Moose, by the way?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And I have, this is a stupid question, Outlook Express. And none of the, you know when you get a link from somebody in your mail and you try to click on it, it doesn't click over and go over to the internet automatically? Is it just because they quit doing that?
Well, Outlook Express is just a bad application. But
what do you like better?
I would suggest, and we suggest on this program pretty regularly, if you want a good email client, you can go to mozilla.org and find Thunderbird, which is a email client that most of the geeks use. If you're not on a Mac, it's the one you should use, I think.
Uh-huh.
And it's called Thunderbird, and it's a standalone mail application. It's in beta, but works very well. And it's got some really good spam filters, smart spam filters.
Oh, really?
And let's see what else about it that I can tell you. It's going to be a lot safer for viruses for you because it won't do some things. It'll also make links linkable.
And it's free.
And it's free. Hey.
Is it hard to hook up? Yeah. Is it hard to get loaded?
It's relatively easy. Yeah, you have to download it.
You run a set of program and it goes.
The biggest thing is you have to download it. And if you're running it, whatever your speed is of the day, it's going to take you a while to download it.
Know your mail settings. There's always 4 things that you need to know. There's your outbound mail server, your incoming mail server, your user ID, and your password.
Okay.
Those are the basic settings you want to know before trying to install the application.
Okay. Thanks a lot, you guys.
Thank you very much for the call.
Bye.
Bye, Moose. We have one more call right now from Brian. Brian, welcome to Geek Speak.
Ah, thank you very much. Love your program. Glad to get the opportunity to listen. Question. I'm a newcomer to DSL, and I've got Mac. I'm running OS 9 on one computer, OS 9.2, and I'm running OS X 10.3 something on my other one. I've been told that with Macs, the loaded software is pretty good as far as security goes when using DSL. Number one, is that true?
Yes, Macintosh security is good.
Okay. Do I need to add virus protection components on top of that?
Yes, actually, I would recommend getting virus protection software.
Okay.
And Norton antivirus is good. There's a lot others.
Okay.
It's a good recommendation, but it's not a necessity on a Macintosh. But it will be it someday.
Right. I'm running through an AirPort Extreme base station for both computers.
Are you talking through that right now?
Your phone is. No, I'm driving and talking on my cell.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're doing that. Go on. And what's your question about the base station?
Okay. I'm assuming that the intrusion protection is good on that one as well. Okay, so you're saying you don't really want to recommend a virus program one way or the other. I'm using Virex on one right now.
Great choice. That's what the UCSC Arts Division uses.
Right, which is why I'm using it. Second question. I've got this old zip drive, old USB zip drive, and I tried loading it one day, and it said, your subscription has expired. And I've never seen anything like that before. And I went, what in the world is going on here? I haven't attempted to upgrade or update the thing because that's ready to...
I think your phone subscription is expiring.
Okay, Brian, we're going to have to take you offline because your phone... But we'll answer that question right now, so turn your radio back up. Brian's question basically is, why is a zip drive coming up with a subscription service thing? And I have no idea. Anybody? Got a guess?
That's a new one.
It sounds
virus.
Like he's got...
It might be unrelated.
The only thing I can think of is he's got some freeware freeware widget that helps him manage files or do something like that.
It could be it's a Windows disk and something's launching Windows mount points on his machine.
No, it wouldn't do that.
I'm trying here. I'm trying. Okay, so Zip, just go up to, with the internet connection, go up to, what is it?
iOmega.com.
But there's not going to be a solution there because iOmega doesn't require you to subscribe to anything.
Well, assuming he's on 9.2, he can disable any extensions and then just reinstall their install package, if you will, get the most recent extensions, then it'll probably be okay.
Maybe when he tries for the update, they'll ask him for his social security number and driver's license.
Don't give it to them. All right, well, we got another question from Buck. And Buck, where are you, Buck? What city?
SoCal.
SoCal, okay, Buck from SoCal. What's your question?
It's a similar question to the last guy, or not one of the previous guys that called.
And your phone not works, so go on.
I'm sorry.
No, go on, sorry.
The speed of my connection, I'm a Mac user, and I recently got a laptop, Toshiba, for the rest of the family to use, and the speed on the connection on the PC is about 42 or 44, and the speed on the Mac is, at the max, 26.6.
Wait, on the Macintosh it's slower?
Yeah, way slow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not just the numbers. You can tell the speed of, you know, pages loading. And
well, let's see what Adam Baker from We've Got It Wired suggests for making your connections kind of the same on either machine starting up.
I don't really have a good solution. I can't imagine they plugged into two different locations or?
Same plug.
Yeah.
Are they
so, in other words,
together?
You're swapping one computer for the other, and in the same location you're getting different bit rates.
Right.
Are you using the same
and it's always
cable?
Been that way on the Mac. It's always been 26.6 in all my previous Macs.
How old is this Macintosh?
It's a new iMac. Hmm. Within the past year.
Do you use the same cable to plug in both computers, or do you unplug from the wall and plug in the other cable?
Same cable.
Hmm. And you're dialing the same provider?
Same provider, same phone number.
I had problems before like that, and sometimes it was a problem with the modem or with the driver. So I will contact Apple and ask them because I think you got a hardware problem there.
Yeah, which means inside your computer. One thing you can try is make sure you have the updates for that iMac, the operating system updates, and then go ahead and do a search on Apple's site for any kind of problems of that nature, see what you come up with. The other thing, but most likely it's just the modem's damaged or it doesn't work very well.
Okay, because like I say, it was always the same on all my other, my G3s.
You know, it could be a setting thing, like the handshake's not working at... Any ideas on that? Like parity's not on the Mac or something like that?
Or is using V90?
No, but that would still give them a higher connection rate than that.
Yeah, you can choose different modem settings, and I tried that.
Yeah.
Did you ever call Apple tech support?
I may have a long time ago, but that was before I got the PC and realized I could get a much faster speed.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so I can call them and see what...
I think so at this point. Oh, and do the search online for this kind of problem.
Update, I've done that too.
Thank you, Buck. Sorry
right,
we can't help you
more.
All right,
thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye. It's probably that Buck's modem is actually bad and was bad from the beginning. And
But he says this happened on multiple Macs.
Yeah. Oh, did he say multiple Macs?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, the other thing is you could call his provider and see if they support Macintosh, because it could be that they have something strange going on. They haven't tested for Macs. Yeah. That's a common thing.
I don't understand that because it's just TCP/IP at that point. I'm using PPP to get it there, but then it's just...
Now, the dial-up connect, the handshake of the modem is software. I mean, there could be something going on. Like, I mean, who knows? Also, the Windows machine could be telling him the appropriate speed with compression.
He said it felt faster.
Yeah. Felt faster.
PC, so
faster on a PC. Something's wrong.
Oh, you know what? He didn't check the box that said go faster.
Yes. Faster than the Windows.
All right. We on our show today, Adam Baker from We've Got It Wired. Adam, your phone number if people are interested in your business.
In the 831 area code 2343776, and that's my personal cell phone.
Wonderful. And from Strata Systems, we had founder Yogos and also administrative wonder Joel Schaefer. And Stratus Systems, you can go to www.stratus, S-T-R-A-T-U-S, hyphen.
Sorry, it's S-T-O-S.
Oh, why don't you go ahead and spell it?
It's S-T-R-A-T-O-S, hyphen systems in plural, .com.
All right, and you can learn more information there, also about classes that they offer, services that they offer. And, of course, you can call their phone number.
831-420-1200.
And I really appreciate you all coming down on Geek Speak today at KUSP Studios near the beach in Santa Cruz. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. The geeks today were Miles Elam, John Tracy. Thank you all for participating on Geek Speak. For those that called in, thank you very much for making Geek Speak what it is. Without you, it would just be us yakking about. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KDBH San Ardo, or on the web at KUSP.org. The whole month of April on Geek Speak, 10 a.m. on KUSP. We're covering your home computer needs. Next week, we will be covering virus protection, clients that you need for your home to be safe from viruses abounding on the Internet. For Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Fine Print with Jen Ramage is coming up next, followed by State of the Arts with my mother, Diana Wright Troxell. And then my favorite music show on KUSP, Two Steps from the Blues with Charlie Lang. Friday's a great day to listen to KUSP. Stay tuned now for Fine Print.